Welcome to Polycast, an official podcast of Poulton Civilization Site.
Daniel Quick.
Makalua.
Imran Siddiqui.
Cardamandua.
With guest co-host...
This is Futsal.
Yeah, well, I mean, Imran's sick, too, but...
In a different way.
Sick in the head. Why is that funny? I don't get it.
Welcome to Polycast, an official podcast of a Poulton Civilization site. We are episode 53. I'm still Makalua. With me today is Dan Q.
I'm still me.
Imran Siddiqui.
It's me.
Cardamandua.
Greetings.
And our guest co-host this week is Futsal.
Hi there.
There's absolutely no guarantee anything is going to become of this, but we've been doing this show for 2 years now. I think we've got a pretty decent product, so come September 15th, I plan on submitting Polycast for this.
Podcast Awards!
Yeah.
Oh.
Can I get Best Supporting Actor?
Best Supporting Smartass? What?
Yeah, that's fun.
You know what would be awesome? If we actually won and we put it on our website and all the people that rag on Polycast, that would be great.
Yeah.
Like, ah, screw you.
They'd probably be like, I used to respect podcast awards, but not anymore.
Oh, yeah, that's probably true.
What's interesting and important to note is in the rules, there's a confidential non-releasable grading sheet that's been created, and 40% of the grading sheet comes from the number of nominations. So we'll have to be getting the word out for people to vote if we ever have a chance.
All right.
That says you can nominate a show for Podcast of the Year or Best Produce and also submit it to an individual category. You should not submit the same show in multiple categories. Multiple submissions are not allowed.
All right, so gaming, I guess.
Yeah, gaming.
Gaming. I think in terms of submitting for Best Produce or Podcast of the Year, I think we're better off with Best Produced.
I think you're biased. Oh, just kidding.
Yeah.
The Best City Competition?
Entry for highest population year to health. 102?
I smell world builder.
I know, really. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's living in a city that's completely surrounded by corn. World builder.
Everyone else has, like, 31.
102.
102, you're like, what?
Well, you know, if he conquered the whole map and he had Sid Sushi, you might get to 102.
Oh, in the thread, they actually do say, it does get rather silly if you allow World Builder.
Yeah.
So it actually is World Builder, which is no fun then. The Best City Competition just totally got destroyed.
Yeah, that's not real. That's crap.
Crap.
This thread is invalid.
Indeed, there's no bananas in it either.
Yeah. I was going to say. There's no banana option in the poll.
I'm guessing Constantinople wins, though. And the guy said, I'm not likely to win. I discount the world builder cities.
Yeah, but everybody else is just putting in their, what can I do with world builder today, bit? So you win, because your city's the only real one.
There was the one guy who had London. He tried to do something good, but that was only 21, and it wasn't as good as the 31 Constantinople.
I think the largest city I've managed to get in Civ 4 is 38.
Hmm.
But most of the time, they're... if the game goes on long enough, somewhere between 25 and 30.
Yes, indeed. In the news, we discussed the French and Spanish nation profiles have been released for Civ 4 colonization. The official Civ 4 colonization website is launched and will take up all your system resources because it just wants to. And Take 2 experienced some financial success in the third quarter. Way to go as a result of Civ Rev, so we say.
In forum talk, no events or quests in Civilization 4 colonization? What the heck? From the vault, why couldn't Civilization 4 have the fun nature of Civilization Revolution? Do some take it too seriously? And Tank and Anti-Tank are backwards in Civilization 4 Beyond the Sword. Question mark.
Was the question mark really necessary? Come on. In the Senate, we talked about disbanding all units in Civ 4.
Then, who would star in a Civ live-action movie?
In the research lab, we talked about how old units should go on strike! Exclamation point.
And if they did, comma.
And that's right. Because, comma, some units are more advanced, colon, semi-automatic rifles, comma, striker missiles, comma, sorry.
They did the summary in a strange way that episode, semicolon. Here's what's been making news in the Civ community.
The French and Spanish nation profiles for the new Civilization IV colonization game.
But didn't we say, like, the information looks like it's been taken from Wikipedia?
I was going to say, yeah, that is what it looks like to a great extent.
Or as Impaler and WOG told us the last episode, it's just a big dump.
One of the two.
Well, it looks like the French, Samuel Champlain, and I think it's de Frontenac, both have the cooperative trait. Natives are more tolerant, 50% less time spent living among the natives to learn a new skill because of, I guess, the historical French manner of dealing with the natives, which is friendly. It seems that Champlain's second trait is enterprising, which is 100% native conversion rates for missions, and Frontenac is militaristic, the free promotion of Grenadier number one, but it seems if you're playing the French, you're going to be a bit more working with the natives, perhaps. But, I mean, it probably is a better tactic to not slaughter them all off.
I never thought I'd say this, but what Imran said.
Yay!
And then the Spanish with Simon Bolivar and José de San Martín both have the Conquistador, plus 25% versus natives, whereas Bolivar has Determined, which is plus 100% effective Liberty Bells on rebel sentiment, and the San Martin has Resourceful, which is minus 50% experience needed for unit promotions. So if you want to be kicking some native you-know-what, then look towards the Spanish civilization in Civ 4 Call. Surprise!
Study and contrast there.
Like historically.
Yeah.
That was the same traits both the French and the Spanish had in the original game. The Liberty Bells are how it determines how rebel and how homeland-leaning that your population is. In the old game, when the town got to 50%, it got more efficient at producing everything. The more Liberty Bells you generate, the more your population would be rebel, and then they'd be, like, really happy and start making, like, an extra few hammers or growing more food, that kind of thing. It was to help ramp up your production before you had the expeditionary force come over.
The official website for the new game
has information a little bit on the game, on the leaders themselves, has some downloads, including a trailer and a walkthrough of the game. Some screenshots, although there really aren't that many. There's only like four or five.
And we've seen them before, right?
Yeah, I don't think any of them struck me as new. You can buy the game through the website. It's listed as $29.99 through Take-Two Store.
Oh, that's not a bad price.
And over on the official 2K forums, but not on the official game's website, you can find the system requirements, which that would seem to be something very simple to put on the official website. But anyway, apparently this game will support Vista.
I see that. There you go.
And really, yeah, it's comparable requirements to Beyond the Sword, as we expected, just with the shader support needing to be 1.1.
Holy crap, this website takes up a lot of system resources.
Someone's overusing Flash.
Nah, really?
I heard a rumor that if you leave the website open for at least 60 minutes, it starts creating a wormhole.
Well, I did have a look at the walkthrough, and for anybody who hasn't seen it yet, it's not like Sulu's famous walkthrough for Civilization IV. It's not a tutorial or anything like that. It's kind of an extended trailer for the game. It does look very cool. I mean, I've seen screenshots. I had never played the original Colonization, and compared obviously to the old screenshots from 1995. Of course, it's a big improvement. So it's got that going for it. But what was interesting was to see that it looks like they tried to retain a lot of the look and feel of the old screenshots and just make them a lot fancier and a lot nicer so that I think fans of the old game, it'll look familiar to them in a lot of respects. Last item in news, Take-Two experiences some financial success in their third quarter. Quite a bit, actually, but they had a net income, according to the article, of $51.8 million. Compared to last year, apparently they had a loss of slightly more than that, $58.5 million. That's quite a turnaround.
You know, the best news, it says sales were led by Grand Theft Auto 4, as well as Top Spin 3, and Sid Meier's Civilization Revolution. I've heard Sid Rev is actually selling like hotcakes. So,
I mean, hotcakes sell.
Very quickly.
Everybody wants a hotcake.
Indeed.
You got a hotcake? I'll buy it.
So it seems like Civ Rev is a cash cow for Take-Two. Are we looking at sequel soon? Keep the money train going.
Doubtful.
I've been hearing that it's been selling really, really well. So, I mean, it seems to be one of the better successes of Firaxis so far.
You mean, yes, of games that require intelligence. Yes, you're right. Also interesting in the article was the note that Take-Two has increased its international sales, where last year it made up 22% of their sales, and this year it's 46%. Whoa.
Good job.
The chief executive of Take-Two, Ben Fetter, would not comment on the ongoing negotiations between Take-Two and Electronic Arts. Yes, that came up in the article. Companies remain in a confidentiality agreement which hints that they are still talking about a potential merger, an agreement they signed last week, a week after Electronic Arts dropped its offer after extending it 5 times, as we've discussed before.
We ridicule nothing. I don't know what you're talking about.
We're very objective.
Indeed.
The Federal Trade Commission cleared a merger of the companies, though together they would be the largest player in, as it says in the article, the all-important U.S. market with revenue twice that of its nearest competitor, Activision Blizzard, according to NPD data, which collects information about the industry. Sounds like there won't be any government intervention in stopping the merger should EA and Take-Two come to an agreement, so...
So that's really up for them to decide.
Civ Rev has come out and has become the next GTA.
Minus the whores.
You must play a different version.
We're not counting Cleopatra then, okay.
Oh!
That's true.
Got news? Email news@apolton.net or send a private message to Dan Q, Locutus, or one of the other news editors.
This is Forum Talk, where we investigate hot civ issues in the forums.
No events or quests in Civ 4 call. Heraclitus is looking at Europa Universalis 3, which the quest system helps guide the player in the beginning. He wants to know why can't the quests in Civ Call do the same for new players, just push them in the right direction, and why not start random events on turn 100 so the player isn't swamped by options too early? He wants this in the game, to which Dale amusingly replied, modders will put it in.
Well, I think as some people pointed out later in that thread, it sounds like a heck of a lot of development work to do that. I mean, it sounds like a cool idea, but...
Dale also later in the thread says, first and foremost, events are intrusive, and he hated them. So, that explains a lot.
I like Snoopy369's point, which is that it's just like with Civ 4. They started with simple, quote-unquote, and made a game that had excellent gameplay value, and then added on features as they saw how people played and how the game balance worked. So, if there is an expansion, then possibly... But I think so long as if when the game comes out, if there's the ability, reasonable ability for modders to actually do that, then I think that's a fair point.
Yeah, on the other hand, I guess, the events have to be different than Civ 4, as they'll point out, because a lot of the stuff that was gained through events in Civ 4 is covered by other stuff. His example is Give Me Food is covered by trade, and religious events are not a factor because there is no religion in colonization and stuff like that. So the one thing is, if they're going to do events, you'd have to totally recalibrate the events just because of it being an entirely different game.
Yeah, not knowing how much time they'd had before they were supposed to release it, they may not have had time to get to that point because they were busy balancing the rest of the gameplay.
And in the end, wouldn't you want them to balance the gameplay instead of adding events?
Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
I do like Heraclitus' comment about, well, so why don't they just sell $30 or $40 game development kits? I'd buy those.
Well, I think the events are fun if you could do it, because I think they sure add in a new flavor to a Civ, but like was said earlier, it would be better if it was an expansion, so you can have that original flavor of colonization, and then you can go back and say, now that you've played this a lot, add this in for a new twist to things.
That's a good point. If they're planning an expansion pack or hoping to do one probably based on sales, then they might be holding back a few items like that with the idea that we'll put this into an expansion pack. Because unlike some of the posters in this thread, I actually like the random events in BTS. I still leave them on.
So do I.
I do too.
Me three, or four, or whatever.
Me added on.
I mean, sure, there are good events and there are bad events, but if you just had all bad events or just all good events, that wouldn't be realistic. That would hurt gameplay either to your advantage or the AI or your opponent's advantage.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And to give the dev team some credit, because the events that are in there I don't find to be too game-changing, with one exception. That's when you get the four barbarian spearmen appearing on the borders, when all your units are warriors and you only have two of them on the road exploring anyway.
You notice that in discussing this so far, we've only specifically talked about events and not quests. But that's okay, because honestly, to me, quests are largely forgettable.
Well, the OP had an interesting suggestion where in some other games the quest system actually guides you. Unlike the quests in Civ 4 BTS, which basically just more or less occur at random, although it is based on some of the things that's going on in your Civ, apparently. But they don't guide you, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll take you in a certain direction because they require you to achieve some things, do some stuff.
Mm-hmm. I think that could be fun if they did that, but...
Again, it strikes me as a development issue, right? Cool idea, but how much more work is that going to be to put that in there?
And what kind of a quest do you have for something like colonization? Civilization, you've got this really long time scale and you have all sorts of quests, but colonization is basically just dealing with the early gunpowder era and stuff, and what kind of quest do you have then? Like, the Seven Cities of Gold, that would be a quest, but it's the only thing I can think of at the moment. What else would you do for a quest?
Fountain of Youth.
Yeah, the Seven Cities of Gold and the Fountain of Youth are things you could find in the... Well, they didn't have goodie huts. They have these little things that looks like coins that sort of had this Inca look to them that were on the map, and that was the version of goodie huts. And you could find one of the Seven Cities of Gold or a Fountain of Youth. Maybe he hasn't had a chance to play and find those things, and there's your quest. You have a Fountain of Youth now.
Or maybe one that says, oh, you need to make contact with X number of native tribes, and you get Y.
This is the Vault segment, with topics cut from earlier episodes, but have found relevant again later.
From episode 48 with Dan Q, Makalua, Cardamandua, Kijin, and Lancer.
Why couldn't Civ 4 have the fun nature of Civ Rev? Does everyone take it too seriously?
The Sultan of ATL says he has Beyond the Sword and the demo for Civ Rev, and he says, I'm sorry, Civ Rev is so much more fun, and also why can't the PC games be built like this, quote-unquote. He elaborates a little later on, he says, I'm not talking about graphics and sound, I'm talking about concept and presentation. Much of Civ 4 feels too much like work. Civ 4 is a good game, but after seeing the creativity Firaxis put into Civ Rev, I almost feel cheated that we have some of the same dull concepts carried over from Civ 3, or exciting ones that they have excluded from Civ 4. And some people point out, well, Civ Rev is coming out considerably after Civ 4, so there is the possibility to look back on what worked and didn't work in Civ 4. I think the best short response in this thread is from Kazap, which is, why couldn't Civ 4 have the fun nature of Civ Rev? Because it has the fun nature of Civ 4 instead. We're not comparing an apple to an apple here.
Yeah, Civ Rev, from what I was reading in those views, it has five civilizations in a game. I've been waiting for more than seven Civs, you know, that they had in Civ 2 for ages. And now Civ 4, you can pretty much stop all the Civs you want in there, and I love it. So it's just different. You know, the fun would probably be just different. It's like why you would play a console game versus a computer game. To me, you would play a console game because you want to blast something and have a lot of fun in a short period of time. You play a computer game because for an in-depth experience.
Yeah, I think he's also pointing at the more humorous take on some of the stuff that they've done in Civ Rev, just from the animations and things. And I think probably one of the reasons they didn't do that on the PC is because they know the PC players are a bit more serious, not all of us, but a lot, are a bit more serious and would have taken that the wrong way. You can't have silliness in my Civ. Despite the fact that people still talk about the Civ 2 advisors, which were completely humorous. Go figure.
Why don't they bring those guys back?
They did, just in animated form, in Civ Rev. Why are you spending so little on science?
Wise man said, only fools don't have luxuries. King.
Gosh.
No, it's true.
All this time later, we're still talking about it. Anytime you make a thread in the Civ 4 form, which I haven't done in a while, but anytime you do that about what would you like to see in Civ 4 that wasn't one of the previous ones, it's always that.
Yeah, I've read some people saying that, oh, that the advisors in Civ Rev are on the path to what they were like in Civ 2, except that the only actual verbalization that you hear is what Firaxis refers to as Firaxlish, which is nonsensical words, but whatever you see on screen, it's just presented as text. You don't get to hear the audio as well. And I can see the pro and the con for that. I don't see why you couldn't have both the Firaxlish, for example, and have them say exactly what's on the screen, but it's not the same. Because, I mean, the leaders are animated, but there is something about some live actors.
Firaxis, that'd be fun. But whatever, I don't want to judge it, I haven't seen it. If it doesn't make sense, it doesn't make sense.
There was one particularly harsh comment on Civ Revan here from the almighty DF. It seems too much like Sid just trying to earn a quick buck by releasing a simplistic game for people who haven't either played a video game since Pong or are too busy trying to get a hold of Hannah Montana tickets to play a video game, unquote. Whoa.
Ooh.
Harshness.
Talk about your hate mail, jeez.
Is your hate mail to him? Wow.
Yes, Sid just trying to earn a quick buck. Well, first of all, as Mackie pointed in an earlier episode, oh my gosh, Sid and Firaxis are trying to make some more money. Wow.
We got that in common.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah, we don't want them to have any more money because we don't want them to develop Civ 5 or anything. Let's think about that.
A couple of interesting comparisons in here. Freck says, Civ Rev is to other video games what a box of crackers or a bag of popcorn is to a chocolate bar. Duller, less rich and exciting, but somehow more satisfying in the end.
Really depends on whether you have a movie to go with that. As long as it's a Victory movie.
Personally, in this thread, I like the chess versus checkers analogy that Keshi provides, although I changed some of what he says slightly. He says it's kind of like asking, why couldn't chess have the fun nature of checkers? And that the answer is based on the individual answering, where chess is more complex, and given how well it's executed, in my opinion, it makes it more dynamic, and I think they've accomplished that very well in Civ 4. Checkers is strategic as well, but you don't have as much depth, for example, the micromanagement capabilities, or the breadth, for example, you've got government choices instead of multiple civics, and you have a religion system, whereas in Civ Rev, religion is simply a technology that you research. And also, checkers games are typically over more quickly than chess, and so in that respect, then, checkers, Civ Rev, Civ 4 is chess.
You could actually play checkers with chess pieces.
That's true, and it may very well be that certainly from things that have been learned from Civ 4 are in Civ Rev, and I think it's fair that some of the things that are in Civ Rev might blend themselves very well on, say, a Civ 5.
Well, if it's true that if they took what Civ 4 had and saw what worked and put it into Civ Rev, then I would assume that they'll do the same thing from Civ Rev to Civ 5.
It doesn't even have to be a choice between Civ 4 and Civ Rev. There are times you feel like a game of checkers, and there are the times you feel like a game of chess.
Very true.
Mm-hmm.
Tank and anti-tank are backwards in Civ 4 Beyond the Sword. M. Corrin basically said he's ambushed in the field by an anti-tank unit, but there's no tanks. So he's wondering why the civilization developed weapons specifically to kill something that doesn't exist. I guess it's just kind of a silly little gripe because Wildpanzer says, you know, they're separate technologies.
Well, I think he has a point if he's talking realistically. No, I probably wouldn't invent a weapon for something that doesn't exist yet.
You think?
Probably not. I mean, you never know.
Look, I have an anti-tank gun. That's great. What's a tank? I don't know yet, but when it shows up, I'll be ready.
But, I don't know, with gameplay, it's really hard to do stuff like that.
Yeah, because you can't always guarantee that somebody's going to go research tanks first.
Right.
Well, it's sort of classic bit of tension civilization's always had, right? On the one hand, reality and historical accuracy, too, which is pretty common criticism leveled at the game. But on the other side, you've got gameplay. You've got the quality of the game. You've got game balance. And I think that's what this is there for, is more towards those latter items to give some balance. Again, the sort of rock, paper, scissors thing we've seen in Civ, especially in this latest version, right, where every unit has a counter unit. You could argue tanks didn't have a counter. There was the ambush promotion, but not a specific anti-tank unit until they showed up in BTS.
Yeah, the anti-tank unit in BTS, you've got 14 strength, 1 movement. It's 100% versus armored units, and in itself, as Prana mentioned, the ambush promotion, which itself is plus 25% versus armored units, and they can also intercept aircraft with a 20% chance.
That was just introduced recently, I believe, right?
Yeah, was it the 3.17 patch, or was it the patch before?
No, I think it's the most recent one. Because people were complaining about airships not having a counter either, and being incredibly annoying.
Yeah, I found them annoying, but I've never really found them particularly effective. The only advantage I saw to airships early on was if you thought, oh, I want to scout that region and see what they happen to have. But I mean, that was just an annoyance. I never found it advantageous or disadvantageous in combat.
Yeah, I actually use them quite a bit in combat. They can function as early fighters or bombers, where they can fly ahead and weaken defenders, basically enhance the ability of any units then attacking, say, in a city, to survive. So quite often I use them before I have my siege weapons or especially artillery attack. And then the units are weakened, the artillery tends to get a better chance of survival.
JB in this thread suggests that the anti-tank unit be defensive only, which would put it in the same category as a machine gun. I think that would be reasonable.
I suppose. I don't use the anti-tank units too much myself, but I haven't been in a situation where I've needed them. Not yet.
You got Spearman.
That's right.
Spearman tank joke once again. Sid would be so happy.
Yeah, he'll get another nickel.
Well, I think it happened once. Actually, I'm thinking now it happened in the All Leaders Challenge game. Which one was it? Carthage. I ended up having Tokugawa next door, and I was trailing behind in techs, and Tokugawa launched a war with me and had tanks, and I didn't. I managed to hold him off with a combination of artillery and infantry with the ambush promotion. So it wasn't too bad at the time if I'd had the anti-tank units. So yes, I would have been building them like crazy.
Yeah, I found that to be their use as well, the only time I will do that. Not necessarily if another civilization is ahead of me in tech, but they happen to be eyeing me for conquest, or at least I believe they are, based on their power strength relative to mine, how easy it is for them to get to me, which of course by the time anti-tank shows up shouldn't be that too difficult, and also what their attitude towards me is.
Welcome to the Senate, where we discuss game strategy.
NFIH asks what your strategy for disbanding old units is. He says that he's in the modern age, has tanks, etc., and a massive army, and he's trying to go for military victory. However, he has a lot of units, like pikemen and maces, and he's worried about if he disbands them, if his power rating will dip enough that rivals may decide to attack him. So he wants to know if there's a certain rule he should follow in terms about disbanding units.
I agree with Scoopy, which apparently just about all of the thread does, too. which is basically they're useful, one, for garrisons, two, for in case of a surprise attack, you can promote a bunch of them in that area. Or you can probably have them just to kind of almost put on the outskirts of your border if you want to, which means just to keep a little barrier.
Yeah, I like the idea with the older units seeing exactly which type they are and what promotions they have. And if they have none or a few, I like to move them into safer cities that I figure, okay, if a nation decided to declare war on me, it's going to be a number of terms anyway before they could actually get to that city and decide. But the garrison thing, as you said, the happiness in there so that there is military protection, and there always is something humorous, for example, of having a pikeman or a mace or a warrior making people happy in a city for protection, you know, when you're in the modern age. But hey, that's gameplay balance versus realism, all that sort of thing. Raw had the point about using them as bait as well and pillaging or pretending to do that. That's helpful as well. Those older units that have some promotions, like if they were used in an earlier battle, for example, I would be moving them closer to the front so that if a surprise attack came around, then I could promote them. And FIH says that he can upgrade some units, but not enough to go through my stack. So be particular which ones you want to do with that. And as I said, any one of those that has, like a city attack, for instance, a whole bunch of those would be more useful along the lines of where you're going to be hit first if you then decide to upgrade them. Because, of course, even though you can build that new infantry, you're not going to instantly be able to get to City Raider 3, for instance, if they're built new. Whereas if you have an older unit with that, it's worth spending the gold to upgrade them. I think the only suggestion in here that is not good, sorry, Super 49er, where he suggests gifting some of them to allies or vassals. I guess in a very narrow window, if you think, they're going to be going after my vassal first or my ally first, and then they're going to be going after me, maybe if I send them some of my older units, it might help them last a couple of more turns, and in which case that'll be a couple more turns that they're concentrating on getting rid of them before they turn to me. But other than that, I don't know, I would think actually gifting units could be useful more in a multiplayer game than a single player game, simply because depending upon the person that you're gifting it to in a multiplayer game, as a human, they might actually think, well, gee, they gifted me a unit. Well, that's really nice. And so then that could actually change their approach to you or whoever gifted it to them, but the AI really is just kind of like a thanks, but what do we want me to say or do?
Well, yeah, because gifting units doesn't result in any diplomatic benefits, right?
That's right.
There's no diplo bonus for gifting a unit.
Yeah, and I would worry that if you gifted too many to your vassal, they might think they were strong enough to not be your vassal anymore, because they would raise the strength meter for them, for their military, even though it's not really that useful of a unit. But we know that the AI isn't exactly logical sometimes.
Which that, in a way, makes it human, but it's not. See?
Well, I actually go counter to a lot of what was in the thread in terms of doing things, because I do disband units quite a bit. Big dividing line for me is when I move on from hereditary rule, because that's one of the main reasons to keep old units around, is for that happiness. But if I move on to something else, like especially representation, which is one of my favorite civics, then suddenly a lot of the old units are just chewing up gold every turn, and they're not contributing happiness back, and as you're going through the game, they're not contributing too much to your power rating.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I start going through and culling the older units.
Isn't it a nice politically correct way of saying you're going to disband a unit, not kill it yourself?
Exterminate.
That's horrible.
They're retiring.
Where's the nerve stapler?
Sadly, this is not Alpha Centauri.
One of the few times that I will start thinking about disbanding units is if I'm worried about my gold income.
I really like what Heraclitus said, that in an MP game, he'd organize gladiatorial games with his allies.
Oh, no.
For XPs and great general points. I thought that was cute. You'd have to really trust your allies, though, because you'd have to declare war.
Yeah.
You have to go to war with your allies just to do that. But if you could do it, then I think there'd be a certain amount of amusement to be gained from doing that.
A Civ live action movie started by Madman of a Leader saying, okay, if they made a Civ live action movie, who would play the roles of all the leaders? And there were some people in this thread saying, oh, how could you possibly have a movie about Civ? It's far too complicated. Look, we're not talking about plot, okay? We're just talking about who would play the role of the leaders. Plot?
Keep in mind, if we're talking a movie, we're talking Hollywood. So once again, plot? I think any Hollywood producer would agree. It's all about casting.
I think one of my favorite suggestions was that Ben Stein would play FDR.
Knowing Ben Stein's politics, I think FDR would roll over in his grave.
Carver in in one post here. As much as I like Star Trek, I don't know about some of these selections where he's choosing Star Trek actors to play some of the roles.
Yeah.
I was...
One suggestion I liked was Danny Glover as Mansa Musa. That made sense to me. I thought Danny Glover has a certain gravitas he would bring to that.
I like how Mad Men of Leader suggested Ben Kingsley. I don't think that he had to be limited to Gandhi, though. I think he could have played a lot of the different roles. He seems to just fit in a movie like this.
Angelina Jolie is Boudica.
They wish. They wish.
Woohoo! I approve that message. She has all the requirements down.
What a shock.
Both of them. What?
No.
Brad Pitt is Alexander the Great.
Maybe Kate Beckinsale for Catherine.
Yeah, I can see that.
Firestorm 94 suggests Shaq for Shaka because, in part, their names are nearly the same.
Okay, then. The one of Firestorm 94's humorous suggestions was the Burger King for Charlemagne.
Who do we get to play our favorite leader, Monty?
Christopher Lee. Oh, just kidding.
No.
Someone suggested that Chuck Norris could play a Praetorian.
The guy who played the dwarf in Lord of the Rings, he could be Ragnar.
And he wouldn't have to be a dwarf.
Yeah.
Obviously, each one of them should be played by Sid Meier, just in drag or costume.
That would be awesome.
Love it.
Oh.
Wow.
That's creating some... Now I'm going to a scary visual.
I'm Catherine. Watch me as I slap you.
Much respect as I have for Sid. I don't want to see his cleavage, so, you know.
Comment of the day.
Sorry, you see, I was in a scary visual place. Now I've taken all of you there with me. So.
Can you believe it wasn't a regular that said that?
Let's hope he only listened to episode 50 and doesn't listen to this one. Come on into the research lab where we explore concepts that are not in Civ yet, but maybe in the future.
Old units should strike, claims Moonwolf. Think about it. You have a job in the army of a mighty empire. When you are on duty, you get to go to your weapon as your fellow soldiers do, but as they have their nice semi-automatic rifles or even SMGs, you have to pick up your bow still looking as it has done for the past 4,000 years. Wouldn't you feel a bit, well, down? And look at Bob, he has a Stinger missile! Shouldn't units that get really old somehow just vanish or go on strike when they are too far behind in the upgrades? I think there should be an absolute end of life for old units when you reach a certain tech level, unquote.
That would be frustrating.
Wow, that sounds like fun.
Yeah, I don't think that would be... I mean, I see where the sentiment's coming from, but that would really suck.
That could be an event.
That would be kind of funny.
This is guiding you through the game. Look, you're totally defenseless, dumbass.
I think it's funny how he humanized the units, though, in that.
I almost think of the older units as being like honor guards, or like the ceremonial guards.
Like the Swiss guards.
Yeah, or guys with like the big bearskin hats outside Buckingham Palace. I mean, they're not really going to prevent anybody from getting in if they really want to get in. They're there for looks.
I always keep the mascot elephants in my city, so maybe you could have mascot Bowman.
Did you just say mascot elephants?
Yeah, we have talked about this before. This should not come as a surprise to you.
I think I blocked this out.
What do you want to see when you zoom into a city? Do you want to see some sweaty, shirtless, unshaven guy in a loincloth holding a club, or do you want to see a...
elephant!
Nice-looking elephant. There you go. Back to the OP. I can understand where it's coming from, because, again, it's the whole realism and historical accuracy bit, and you're not going to have, in the real world, warriors and archers guarding your city when everybody has guns. I think it'd be very tough to put it in gameplay. That was our first reaction, pretty much, as a group, was, oh, that would suck if they all disappeared. It would even be tough to do it as a sort of thing where, oh, within 20 turns or 30 turns, you have to replace these units or they're gone. Even that would be challenging and perhaps even a bit annoying. So it might be a place of, you know, just gameplay winning out here.
Call in today.
In North America, the number is 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLLY. In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLLY.
You can Skype us at the Polycast or email us at polycast@polton.net.
For more information on Polycast, our sibling show, Modcast,
log on to the series' official website at polycast.polton.net.
The top Polycast episodes from August, according to our stats. I think we all know what the most popular episode was. Do I really need to even say that?
Sid.
Yeah. I probably don't need to say what the second most popular...
My return?
That's Sid.
Despite Imran's return, it still...
It does. All right, Girls Playing Sid.
No, Girls Playing Sid was not the number two production.
Really? What was number two?
Yes, Civ 4 Call Special.
How is that say that?
Oh.
Wow.
This is because it's new and shiny.
What was number three?
Episode 51.
Oh, the one right after the Civ Special.
Yeah.
So now what was fourth?
The second focus on Civilization Revolution.
Fifth?
The 15th episode of Modcast.
Girls Playing Civ didn't make it?
Number 11.
Oh!
My gosh. Bucky, let's do another one.
I find it interesting, Annalie, that you didn't suggest the sequel to Girls Playing Civ until...
Well, I'm very competitive this way.
You know what she's going to do? Girls Playing Civ with Sid Meier. Forsaken number one.
You've been listening to episode 53 of Polycast, the official podcast of Polton Civilization Site. My name is Imran Siddiqui, and I have been joined by a motley crew led by Daniel Quick.
Bye, y'all.
Cardamandua.
Bye.
Makalua.
Time to go hide from the hurricane, thanks.
And our guest co-host today, Ron Sissitul.
Yes, he messed it up.
Wait a minute, did you just say Ron is such a tool? Hey, come on.
Try that again.
Managed to take my board name and insult me twice. I think that's a record.
Okay, try it again.
All right.
It said Sissutil.
That's right. All right. And joined by our guest co-host, Sissutil.
So long.
Senate is next.
Excuse me.
What was that?
He sneezinated.
What are you laughing at a sneeze for? People are weird.
It didn't sound like a sneeze. It sounded different.
It sounded like you swallowed the mic.
Microphone.
That's sort of what it sounded like.
What about the Sid Meier one?
But that was the next one I was going to listen.
There's hardly any joking in it.
Because you had an adult present.
My husband said that's why he liked me. It was because I knew games and I liked Civ.
It's like, yeah. So if anyone else walked by and said they liked games, you would have married them?
The end. Yeah. Yeah.
I missed my window.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
That was good. Maybe we should put that in the episode.
Record date?
September 13th, 2008.
Sound Clips, copyright Civilization 4, and the Warlords, and Beyond the Sword expansion packs. Copyright 2008, Appleton Civilization site at appleton.net.